Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways, and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, guys. This week we spoke to GB Junior and Loughborough University student Matt Stonier. Matt won the Emsley Car Mile in Highgate last weekend, and he backed up his victory with a new 1500 metre PB today in the Birmingham Diamond League, where he ran 3:37. Enjoy.
Hello, welcome back to another week. And yes, this is our third Emsley Car Mile winner on the show, so on the podcast. So enjoy the latest Emsley Car Mile winner to be crowned. Matt Stonier, as Lum says, and obviously based in Loughborough, so we talk about that a little bit, talk about his training, talk a lot about the history of the event in the book, actually, so quite interestingly, you know, he talks us through what it was like signing that famous book. They're on their third edition already of the Emsley Car Mile. We know the likes of Sebco, El Garouge, etc. have all signed it, so he talks through all of that process, prize money, how his life has changed a little bit since then. We think Stonier is the real deal, and we think he's got a bright future ahead of him as well. When you look at the guys running 3:39 last year, he was the kind of one who kind of performed at British Champs, and now has kind of come out this year and kind of backing up his performances last year. So expect to see this young man around for years to come over the 1500 meters as well. But yeah, so that's kind of it. And we do touch upon his future, and interestingly, you know, Stonier is someone who still competes over cross country to a very, very high level. You know, European under 23, still runs for GB on the cross country. And that's a 1500 meter runner. Not often do you see that over 1500 meters. So we kind of talk, is he going to continue the cross country going into winter? I know it's a long way off. Sorry for you, you track lovers. But yeah, we just talk about that background a little bit and how, you know, as a 1500 guy who has clearly tons of speed, makes running cross country work. So that was an interesting take as well. So, but look, enjoy the podcast. Look out for this one. He's got a big season ahead of him. And we'll catch you next week as always.
Welcome to the podcast. How have you been the past week, mate? Because obviously you had a big run last weekend in Highgate.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. Thanks for having me on. It's been a crazy week. Since Saturday evening, it's just kind of been a change in mindset, a change for the season, and just kind of a new experience of hopefully being at that next level of athletics, really.
Yeah, 100%. Like, talk about the race itself, because obviously it's considered the best atmosphere for 10K. Obviously, it was the first time the Emsley Car Mile was held there. What were you expecting going into it, like, in terms of the atmosphere itself?
Yeah, well, I'd never been to the event, and obviously it hasn't been on the last couple of years. So I wasn't quite sure. I'd asked a few people, Max Wharton, one of them, I asked, have you ever been there? And he said, yeah. And he said, it's just amazing. And I arrived at about, must have been just after 4:35. And even by then, for the crowd and just the whole atmosphere was amazing. And just seeing, when I actually saw the barriers in lane three, I just couldn't believe that I would actually be running on a setup like that. And I think what Ben and all the organizers did is just to make what the general public would probably say is one of the more boring events for athletics into the greatest, like, long middle distance event in the calendar year, really. And I mean, it goes to show, look at the names that turn up and the people watching and the hype and the publicity the event gets. It's incredible. And I think that fed into the mile. And I think it was a great idea to have the mile there. And for a first mile as well, you couldn't really ask for a better atmosphere and location for it. So it kind of all went together, and the evening and the weather, it kind of just all worked out and into one great race, really.
So that was your first race over the mile distance as well, then?
Yeah. So, I mean, the only miles I've ever done are Westminster Mile back in those age group days.
Right, yeah.
And then I was meant to actually race the Emsley car last year in Gateshead.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Diamond League in Gateshead, obviously, is a separate event, a bit like last weekend. And I ended up getting COVID the week before. So that I kind of ruled that one out. And I was quite gutted because I thought I was in quite good shape. And the aim was to go sub four. And obviously, that's always been quite a big goal for any runner, really. So when the opportunity came up this time, it was, yeah, let's go for it. And being at the night of the 10Ks was just an added bonus to it, really.
Oof, yeah, you absolutely smashed sub four, got the win. Did the atmosphere on the night, did that affect how you raced at all? Because I spoke to George Mills after, and he kind of said he made his move a little bit too early because the adrenaline on the back straight, he said, was so good that it kind of just inspired him to just make a move. And obviously you were someone who hung back a little bit in that race. So,
yeah. I knew I had to hang back a bit. I just, because of the caliber of athletes in that race, like George, you see the lineup and you see 335, 336, and even, I mean, there was a 331 guy in it. And I knew that they're not, well, I went in going, they're not my race. And I'd sit near the back and hopefully get carried along to a certain extent, which I did. Mm-hmm. And then I just felt kind of good with 600 and 400 meters to go and managed to move up. As I think a few were coming back a bit, having watched it back, maybe they did go out a bit quickly and the crowd probably did have something to do with that. But as well, having it in lane three, I've told a few people, it felt, I know if you run through like a narrow path or something, how quick it feels, because it's so narrow and that you feel like the crowd are on top of you almost. You feel like you're flying even quicker, which maybe got some people carried away, but I don't think anyone ridiculously went out too quick or anything, but the crowd did push on the pace, which was great for the event.
Yeah, and then after you won, you talk about, you touched upon it earlier, that change of mindset for the rest of the season. We kind of saw what Ellis Cross, club runner, his kind of world changed overnight, and I think yours has had, well, I would presume it's kind of been a similar effect. So yeah, what's your kind of mindset now after that race?
Yeah, I had to enjoy it like on the night and just kind of soak it in. And then we looked, I met up with my coaches on Tuesday and we kind of really had to reassess the next couple of weeks. I've had a couple of other interviews and stuff like that the last few days and emails flying around, which is a completely new experience and very cool experience as well. So it has been very cool, and obviously races have had to change and assessing where we can go with the season. I mean, Emsley car wasn't even on the season kind of schedule. I was meant to be racing in Ireland, which kind of fell through a bit with the quality of that race and the standard, with I think the Emsley car having quite a say in that. So it's already changed and I'm sure it will keep changing, but it's for the better as well. These big events, etc., and opportunities you can't really turn down either.
For sure. Can you give like some perspective, I guess, to some of our listeners who maybe might not know what you're doing before? So you talk about this being a bit of a step up in terms of atmosphere and the caliber of field, but it's not like you were any slouch before. Like, you always had a lot of success kind of through junior rankings and things like that. So talk about kind of where you saw yourself before in terms of like GB junior cross country teams and stuff like that.
Yeah. That's where I feel a bit like Ellis in a way. Obviously, everyone's treating him as a club runner and the blokes what represented GB however many times. And I feel like I've kind of had that not as quite a big scale. I think everyone kind of knows me through cross country. That is where I kind of made my claim to fame, essentially. kind of under 17, under 20. And then I've fortunately been able to go to two Eurocross. Haven't had the best races at Eurocross, but I mean, getting to Eurocross with the caliber of athletes in our age groups is, well, I think quite a good success anyway. And then kind of since then, I've had a good winter. And last summer, I was able to run 3:39, which I think also went a bit under the radar because of all the events last summer with the Olympics in Tokyo and under 20 and under 23 athletes being able to run so quickly. Anyone that was kind of just a bit slower, like myself, kind of was not really talked about, which was completely fine. And I liked it being that way. I guess when it comes to this year, you get the people that kind of knew about what you did last year and go, yeah, I saw that coming. And then you get the people who didn't even know who you were, which I like it both ways. And yeah, I'm happy to deal with that. And hopefully by another few races by the end of the season, a few more might know who I am.
Yeah, interesting you touched upon last year. You know, when you, obviously you ran the British champs, there was quite a pack of, I don't know how many guys, 5-6 guys all running 3:39, like you say, in that under 23 age group. But you were the one, for me, you were the one who performed at the British champs. Where were you, seventh or something?
Eighth,
yeah. But out of all those guys.
It was 0.01 seconds between myself and seventh and sixth. It was myself, James West and George. And I was at the back of that trio. So we were all pretty much together. And unfortunately, I missed out on sixth. But even then, like, I was within earshot of top six as well.
Well, this is it. And out of all those guys who'd run 3:39, you were the one who went on to qualify for that final, which we knew, you know, just qualifying for that final alone was a huge achievement. And then, like you say, you performed there as well. So kind of thought, you know, racing, you seem someone who's, you know, and obviously you won on the weekend. You're a good racer. You're a Bucks champion as well.
Yeah, no, I love racing. It's, I mean, I love it in cross country. I feel like it's just a grind. And at the end of the day, it's best man on paper with the best legs wins. And I kind of translated that into track a bit. And I love the racing. People come and go, how do you get into these gaps and find these like moves and stuff? And half the time it's luck. Actually, more than half the time it's luck. But I also just love the environment of being able to use tactics. I feel sometimes people take tactics for granted and actually they can have quite a big impact on your race. I would never go into a race with no tactics, and I like sticking to it. It makes it more fun, I think. I like using that in the race, and if it pays off, then it looks good. And if it doesn't, then no one needed to know what your tactics were. So I quite enjoy doing that. And that's where the racing comes into play. And I've obviously had more experience at that, obviously with under 23s last year and then senior champs last year and even Bucks 2 weeks ago. It's kind of getting that racing mind straight to the forefront and then using that in pace races as well, which is useful.
So were you ever like act on instinct at all, or were you just completely, you know, mid race, just trust the tactics and just try and stick to the plan the best you can throughout?
This weekend, it was just stick to the plan throughout. I was a little bit shaky being so near the back. But I just had to say to myself, look, that's where you thought you would be. That's where you expected to be. And you were happy being there. So you need to be happy there in the race. Obviously championship racing, it does kind of go out the window a bit, and you have to be instinctive and react straight away, because the race can happen in any numerous ways. Whereas I feel the racing, like last Saturday, you kind of know it's going to go out hard. People are going to go with the pace, and especially for the first two laps, sticking to what you feel comfortable doing and what you've planned is necessary to run a good race. And so far it's worked, and hopefully it might continue to do so until it doesn't, and then I have to reassess.
Yeah. In terms of that kind of race plan, how detailed is it? Like, do you sit down with your coaches and discuss like every 200 meters, or what sort of thing is that?
It normally comes from myself. It's got to the point now where my coaches will go, you know what you're doing? And yeah. I just, being such a big like sports fan, like I just kind of immerse myself into like tactics of just all sports, not just running. You can use so many different examples of tactics. I like the one of just cycling, and like if you just watch the last 5K of like a Tour de France sprint stage, the tactics and just moving through, and I kind of imagine myself in that kind of experience and hopefully open up a different kind of mindset to athletics and tactics and athletics being able to use from other sports. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, then you find something new, or you go back to the drawing board and go, was it the tactics that I got wrong, or was it just the legs on the day and the competitors just being better?
Yeah, I think that's a hard place to draw the line. You know, how do you know if you underperformed or, you know, the tactics are wrong?
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to come into play this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't see myself. And again, I have to look at the race itself and go, like, Mo Katir and Josh, they're not my race. Even though we're in the same race, it's a completely different ballpark shooting for something like 330 versus 335. And you can't just go in with the mindset of, well, I'll just sit on the back of them or I'll just follow them round, because 9 times out of 10, that's not going to work. So it varies for every race and the quality of the race. So, yeah.
But then, you know, this is what I thought, you know, on the weekend you had and the others didn't. You had those three rounds at Bucks, which I think was probably super important for you. And you were able to, you know, you're a little bit race sharp in compared to other athletes. So, you know, you might stand a better chance than you think you do. But, you know, one thing which for me stands out on that race on the weekend is the number of athletes in the race. This could be a 3K lining up. Like, I think I'm looking at the list now. I think there's about 20 guys in there. You know,
I think last time I saw they were 19. I don't know if I counted correctly.
Yeah, 19. Yeah, 19. I'm just guessing, but yeah, it looks like. And this, like you said, the standard. You've got, you know, McSwain, Ollie Hall, Katir, Josh Kerr, Ada Abel, yeah. Kipsang's in there.
Eight from the Olympic final. Wow. Well, I can't get my head around that.
So, you know, yeah. Have you thought about, you know, racing against 20 guys? Have you ever done that before?
No, not cross country. It's slightly different. And 20 guys of that caliber as well. It's not like there's going to be two different races on. There's going to be 20 guys all vying near that top spot. So that's a completely new kind of mindset and something I have to look up. I have to watch a few Diamond Leagues over the last couple of years to try and see how they run, etc. They're definitely very different to Bucks. But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. And it's another opportunity to kind of mix it in with those guys. They don't really know who I am. So I don't matter to them. So I just mix it up with them and try and get in the way and try and cause a bit of, you know, get in the way of them and disrupt their race and hopefully have a good one myself.
Yeah. So pre-season, what were your goals for the season? Because like you said, they've probably gone out the window a little bit now.
Yeah. I think the main goal was just run as quickly as I can. Whatever comes with the time, comes with the time. If you're running 3:36, then whatever comes with that, such as a Diamond League, is a tick in the box. I think my kind of top goal at the start of the season was to be able to make a Diamond League, whether that was Birmingham, which we kind of ignored and discarded. But making a Diamond League is kind of the next step up for me. And to be able to do that this soon in May in a home Diamond League in a brand new stadium in a stacked field is just, I couldn't have asked for a better season so far. But then it is May. So I've had to look about what to do next, and I've got a race lined up in Netherlands the week after. And then I think it's just a few weeks until British Champs. I might go down to Watford for the BMC Grand Prix. That's always a great race and great evening. And the opportunity to run quickly at Watford is there. And then from British Champs, myself and coaches, we split that as the end of part one to the season. And then we'll look at part two when we get to that point, because as I've realized the last week, things can change very quickly, and having too many ideas set in stone probably isn't the way to go from now. But I've got a couple of 15s, hopefully, a couple of 8s. I need to work on my 159, 800 PB.
Goodness me.
So there's a couple of things that I do need to do by the end of the season.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned chatting to your coaches just then. Talk us through kind of your setup up in Loughborough then.
Yeah, so I'm in my second year now in Loughborough, and I'm coached by Chris and Sonia McGeorge. They've been at Loughborough for a while now, and when I arrived, I was very fortunate to meet George Gandy. I met him just the once. He took me to a Toby Carvery and kind of lined up the how Loughborough Athletics works, and about 3 hours later I left. And then obviously it was very sad news with that, and Chris and Sonia kind of took up the reins, not just for myself but for a few Loughborough athletes. And last year it was very much them at the forefront of Loughborough, and they kind of became my coaches full time, really. And then obviously Kyle's come in. Obviously he did the podcast with you guys, and I'm sure you've heard about a bit what he's aiming to do at Loughborough. But I've stayed with Chris and Sonia. Obviously it's worked, and there's no need to change anything if it's not broken. And I feel comfortable in the setup. And it's not just a setup of coaches and athlete. It's a setup of coach, athlete, and 20 other athletes that you're training with, who, if anything, are more of a help than just the coaches. Being able to train with the likes of Mortimer throughout winter, who could go and run low 13s this year, and then you hit the track and you've got guys like Josh and Ben who can go run 145 800s. So all across all ends of the spectrum, you've got people to run with, and it's just a great environment to be in at Loughborough.
Yeah, talk about the dynamic of having two coaches. Do you see them, you know, both as equals? Who kind of gets the final say?
Sonia probably gets the final say. She's more of the man in the relationship and the coaching element to it. But no, Chris does have his say, and obviously they've both got very experienced backgrounds in running, and that does go to show. Chris obviously has formerly won the MZ Car. A lot slower than I was. I think he was 4.07, as he reminds me. So obviously they know what they're doing, and they've been around George, who obviously had such a wealth of experience. So it's a different take on kind of coaching, but I do really like it. I mean, even on track sessions, it means you have someone at 200 meters and someone at 400 meters. And just those little differences feel like they make a slightly greater difference throughout the season. I mean, it works for this week. Last weekend, I mean, Sonia came down to Birmingham to Highgate, and then Chris was up in Birmingham for the other athletes. So it does work, and obviously they're used to that, and it's a good environment to be in.
For sure. You mentioned Mortimer. He's obviously injured at the moment. I think he put on his Instagram. What's it like without him in the training group?
You do miss him. He's a great guy. He can turn up and not do much of a warm-up, not do much, and just go and run a first rep K in like 2:35 in flats. And it just, he's an absolute unit. He's just incredible. I mean, he's doing bike sessions now that I'm sure Alex Yee would probably be worried about. But no, we do miss him, but he's not kind of in that, I guess in summer, he's a bit more 5K orientated, and there's more of a 1500 meter core group at the moment. But whatever distance you're doing, there's someone up there. I mean, I was fortunate. I did a session with Josh Lay the other day, for one of the first times I trained with him in almost 2 years, and just being able to run with another GB 3:36 guy just kind of spurs you along even more. So if there's someone injured, there's always someone else to help you.
Yeah, because you know, on that, it does kind of get to the point. You know, you're starting to get to a level now where there's not going to be too many people in and around Loughborough who can help you out.
Yeah, I mean, we had to run a session last week, and we were told we had to go through an 800 in 155, and I said, I can't run a 155. Like, a 155 in training, you've got to be mad. And then as soon as Josh is there, and you're ticking along, and then midway through, you think, actually, this is all right. So it's fortunate to have people there at the moment. I'm not sure people's plans at the end of the season. People do tend to stay in Loughborough. I know Tom Mortimer's staying. I know Ben Patterson's staying. So we've got another group staying, and I'm sure the new group of freshers, they'll come in and they'll want to be as near the front as they can and they'll get involved. And that's the environment of, as runners, isn't it? You always want to be at the front. I'm sure any keen freshers coming in September, that first rep on grass, if they're not leading, then there's something wrong. So the next age that kind of comes in, the next generation, I'm sure they'll be pushing from below whilst I have people pushing me from above.
Yeah, no, those grass sessions, we've kind of, you know, we've seen a little bit. I think Sweat Elite went down there and stuff, and you can really get a feel for, you know, the depth of athletes all kind of thrashing around that grass field.
Yeah, no, it's a great place, Holywell. It's a dark place in winter, but it's where it gets you in summer, and clearly it's doing the right thing. It gets a bit muddy and then you're having to put your cross spikes on, and it's a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. in the rain, and everyone kind of gets down there and it's all pace and splits are out the window, and it's just on finishing the session, which is, I love those days, a proper grind, and you realize the benefits now. But we all say we could never imagine ourselves doing that now. But you do. So,
well, it's funny you talk about that, because there's not many 1500 runners out there who could probably relate to sessions like that and have such a strong cross-country season like you do. I can't think of really any off the top of my head on the current 1500 rankings who can perform on the country like you can. Is this something, you know, have you thought about that, you know, with your coaches going forward? Will we always get to see you on the cross-country? Because I think it's amazing. I think more 1500 runners should be on the country, but we know, you know, speed is such a big factor of the event.
I do love it. I love the cross country, and it's kind of where I started and where I kind of broke through. And I think most people still see me as a cross country athlete, which is fine by me. Just those days in Liverpool or Parliament Hill, they kind of stick with you more than maybe a track event does.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, maybe not last weekend, but they do stick around. I will give it a go. It clearly helps me. I enjoy it. It gets me through winter, and I've never been on a training camp. I've never been abroad for training. So I've always been used to an English winter. And obviously the kind of community of the cross country I've known to grow and love. And as long as it works, which it looks like it's doing, I'm sure I'll continue. I've never given indoors a go. And I'm quite happy with that. I mean, track is enough running outdoors on a 400 meter track. I don't need to be doing it on a track in winter as well. There is a bit of love for cross country, and I'm sure it will continue. I may get a bit of hate saying you're a 1500 meter runner now, you can't be messing around in cross country, but if it works, it works, and
yeah.
I still enjoy it, so why not?
Mm. On the flip side of that, have you thought about testing yourself kind of over 5K on the track?
No, 12 and a half laps is about 8 laps too far for me. I do need to give it a go one day. And I mean, even my 3K PB is 8:30 from the Loughborough International last year. And that's the only 3K I've ever really done. I think I would have given a go at a 5K this summer earlier on, maybe about this time. But I got struck down quite badly with tonsillitis in about April. And that kind of took away 2 weeks of pretty much base training. And then it was very much into, okay, let's work on the 15s now, and we'll aim for that. It's also nice whilst I'm this young to see what I can run over 15 and even 800, because I do know at some time in the future I will step up. And if going by the cross country results, then I should be able to run a decent 5K. So it will come eventually, but I'm going to try and hold away from that as long as I can. And I think 1500 for me is the pinnacle of middle distance running. And I think being able to compete at the top of the UK in the 1500 meters is almost a golden ticket into a senior champs, a world champs, Commonwealth, Euros, whatever final. Whereas obviously being the best in the UK at the moment in 5K may only put you on the brink of a final in a world champs, just because the standard in East Africa and even USA and elsewhere is just so high at the moment. So I do see myself as a 15 runner at the moment, and hopefully for a few more years.
Yeah, good point. So it sounds like, you know, you don't really compete over anything other. Like you say, your 800 PB needs work. Well, you just need to rewrite it. your 3K PB, you need to rewrite it. So you purely, you know, your summer season just consists of 1500s.
Yeah. I mean, again, last year I was meant to do some eights and then COVID got in the way. So that kind of ruled that out. And then I was meant to start with a five at the start of this year and illness ruled that out. So maybe it's just something saying that I need to just focus on the 1500s. But I do need to, and I do want to as well, run at least a good eight this year, whilst I know I'm in pretty good 15 shape, maybe after British champs or maybe even Watford, I might see what I'm like over eight, but it's quite a scary place to go to.
Mm. In terms of your training then, obviously you've got like a massive engine and you prove that in the cross country. How much does your training change when you move from cross country season into the track?
Pretty little. I tend to Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Thursday being a tempo throughout winter. And that doesn't really change in summer. Maybe just more a bit more speed specific. So Tuesday might be a bit shorter and obviously a bit quicker. But I do like the aerobic side. I do thrive off the aerobic side. I've never done a speed session. Actually, I've done one speed session in my life with Ben Patterson and that's it. I don't feel like I really need it. And I do feel like I need that aerobic base. I know because Jakob does it, it's probably in my head that that's the route I need to go down. But working at that VO2 max kind of level is where I feel like I'm gaining most from training. And it's the same in winter, except the volume just tends to be a bit higher. So that doesn't really change. Obviously, I'm racing a bit more. So I haven't been able to string a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for quite a while now. And you have to deal with that in summer because you do all winter to race in summer. So that's the way it is. But it doesn't change particularly much.
Yeah, and your progression is something to admire. And that goes unnoticed as well. A 350 to a 339, man, in a single season. And I know, you know, we had COVID and the pandemic and stuff, but that's, how does a person actually go from running 350? And, you know, because when you go to sessions, you must be like, right, I just got to run some 62s, maybe some 61s, you know, and you'd be happy with that as a 350 guy. But, you know, to be going running 58, 59, 58s is just insane. How did you manage to make that progression, you know, both mentally and physically over the course of a year?
I think the biggest change for me has been university, going into a university lifestyle and running lifestyle, not just student lifestyle, is just been a massive step up for me in terms of the volume of sessions, the quality of sessions. So that in itself is a good 5-6 seconds. And then I think that whole COVID year of not being able to race doesn't really do justice, because I probably would have gone 47, 46, mm-hmm. Which would have made the progression not jump so much. But I do like having had that kind of year of training, and clearly it's paying off now. But yeah, hopefully I can jump again this year. But I like the idea of being able to jump up. I know last year, I think I probably could have run quicker. I only did 2 1500s that were paced. It was just Sport City in Watford. So
yeah,
I feel like even then I had maybe another a 338 high in me. So I think sometimes the numbers do lie, but it just means that when you do run quicker times, it gets more attention.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Look, I think I know the answer to this, just the way you've spoken about the sport, but have you looked beyond this season at all, kind of in terms of the next 2 years, 3 years, 5 years?
Well, I'm probably going to be at Loughborough for another year, maybe two. So I know being in this environment, hopefully I'm going to keep on the same kind of trajectory I'm on now. Next year is obviously an under-23s track year, which would be a big opportunity. And then beyond then, you're kind of looking into that kind of top level, top three of Worlds and Olympics. But the standard at what 1500 is, it just feels quite far away still. And there's still a few under 20. I'd love to go and do an under 23 cross again and hopefully one day get on that podium. But I mean, being on the same age category as Zach Muhammad and Charles Hicks just means it's probably never going to happen. But just being able to represent GB as many times, England as many times, is all you can really ask for. And then hopefully that in itself brings you to a senior champs.
Mate, still so young, still like with a good few years. You know, you look at the guys in the event, like the likes of Whiteman, they're 27 now, you know, Kerr, I think 26. So got some good years on them as well. I meant to touch upon it earlier as well, but the process of signing that Elmsy Carmarle book. Talk about that, because, you know, there's a rich history with that. Did you scan through? Did you try and scout out, you know, famous signatures in there? Is it a page per signature or is it just scribble wherever you want?
Yeah. So before the race, everyone had to sign on the left-hand side of the page and everyone had their own box drawn for them. And I nailed the signature. I thought, yeah, that's a good one. I'm glad I've got a signature in there for making the start list. And then obviously at the end, they kind of called me, oh, you need to come sign the book or whatever. And then on the same page, but on the right-hand side, there was just one box for the winner. So I think they have all the start lists on the left-hand side and the winner on the right. But it was just, I think it's one page per year. So I couldn't go through any of the others and I wasn't really in state of mind. But I'm a bit frustrated. I'm a bit frustrated with my signature for the winning signature. I think I was just a bit too tired and a bit too fueled with adrenaline. So that was probably a 4 out of 10 signature. So if I could go back and redo it, it would be quite nice to, but maybe another year. But I'm very happy to have my own signature in then. I mean, the names that have won it, I was on Wikipedia the other day. Hopefully I get added to Wikipedia. That would be probably the highlight of my career. But seeing some of the names on there, British and overseas as well, I think there was a 345 on there.
Wow.
It's just crazy.
Wow, who did that?
I think it was El Garouge.
I was going to say, surely El Garouge. Yeah, El Garouge. Wow.
Yeah, you talk about a state of mind after the race. I remember watching the stream. And how long did it take you to realise that you'd actually pipped Copeland at the end?
I kept kind of asking and they were like, it felt like 60, 70%. Yes, you've won it. Which I wasn't taking. I needed 100%. I wasn't sure on the dive because I knew it came down to the dive. And the last thing I wanted to do was kind of think I'd won it and turned out that I hadn't. So I kind of forced myself not to believe it until at least 5 or 6 people told me, which I'm glad I did it that way because it is what it is. If I celebrated or whatever and ended up not winning it, it would have been quite a big letdown. So it did take a while because I just couldn't believe that I'd even got close to winning it, let alone almost beating Piers Copeland in the sprint finish, which just I don't think I've ever seen happen on any event before. So it was just a crazy, crazy kind of few moments. And I needed kind of that reassurance that I had won it. And then I think until I signed the book, then it was, okay, yeah, you've done this.
I don't know. Your record's looking pretty good against Copeland now. You beat him at last year at Champs and you beat him in the Elmsy Carmarle. You might beat him on Sunday.
I don't know. It's good whilst it's lasted. We'll see. It's 2-0. So whatever happens after Saturday, I go away still leading. it's great to be able to even compare myself to these guys now. I mean, Copeland the last 2-3 years has been that, he's the next guy. He's the next guy coming through. And to even be able to race against them and let alone compete against them is just a whole new ballpark.
Yeah, talking of celebrations, you had quite a bit of time to celebrate in the Bucks final. What's the triangle celebration about?
It's a bit of a Loughborough inside joke, this. So I think it started a year and a bit ago with Josh Lay coming up with one of his crazy ideas that the triangle is the team. And then you've got your coaches, your physio, the athlete in the center and everything around that. And it became a bit of talk just amongst the boys. And then Ben West went and won the Euro cross for the team and ended up walking across the line doing it. And he was like, and then Ben's actually got a tattoo of a triangle on his leg now. Which is such a Ben thing to do and fair play for him to doing it. And then since then, it's just kind of been the thing, this red triangle. And I didn't want to think of a celebration silver bucks because the last time I thought of a celebration for a race, I ended up not winning.
What race was it?
National Cross. not that I'd thought of a celebration, just that it enters your head. Uh-huh. And that ended up being a bit of a shambles. So I didn't think of anything. And the last like 10 meters, I realized I won it and I had no idea what to do. And it just kind of just popped into the head at that moment. So I don't know why I was thinking of Ben West in that situation, but I must have been. So, and then it's just kind of stuck. And I don't know if I'll get the chance to do it again this summer, but if someone from Loughborough wins some event, I'm sure it might come out.
Nah, that's cool, mate. You guys at Loughborough should patent that, actually. So a few people might nick that one. I quite like it. The Loughborough Triangle, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we just got
some... I saw, it was a while ago now, I think it might have been Pedri, scored a goal for Barcelona and did it. But that was after Ben had done it. Clearly he'd got it from us somewhere.
Yeah, he must have been
Pedri. It was someone.
Yeah, he's supporting that Spanish team at Eurocross, for sure. yeah, we just got some little quickfire questions to finish off with, although they're never quickfires with us, to be fair. What's your kind of favourite or your hardest workout? Might be the same thing.
A Saturday on Holywell, an 8x3 minutes off 90 seconds, just grinding out, getting it done. It doesn't matter what splits you run, that's it.
So are those 3 minutes hard 3 minutes?
The 90 second jog recovery just about makes it hard. If it was 60, it wouldn't be too bad, but you've got Mortimer out front anyway, so it's always hard.
Right. Talk us about that 155-800 workout you did with Leigh just before the OMSI car though.
Yeah, so that was I had 1K, 5 minutes, 1-800, 5 minutes, 2 400s off 1 minute, and then 6 200s off 30 seconds. And the K was 3K pace, that was 2:38 on my own. And then Josh hopped in for the 800 and we had to go 155. And Josh kept going for 200s, so he actually ran something silly over a K. And then it was 2 400s in 57:58, and then 6 2s in about 27:28, flat out on the floor at the end. So it was a good set. Those are the kind of sessions that in summer, obviously slightly different to what we'd normally do in winter, just to work on that speed a bit more. But I'm not sure how much I like them really.
Yeah, they're just hard. How many days out was that from the mile?
Saturday, so the week before. Week before, yeah.
Nice. Best place to train, or your favourite place, or both?
Brock. So we've got two fields in Loughborough. We've got Holywell, which is the slog kind of field, get the job done. And then we've got Brock, which is the cricket field right on the centre of campus. And that's about just short of a 500-metre lap. And that grass is just stunning. Mm. It could be like a green in golf. It's that kind of grass. And that you can really get moving on there. And it's on grass as well, which I'm quite good at running on. So that's probably the favourite place to run for sessions. And then obviously the track and the facilities at the track make it quite a good experience to run there. You're not just turning up to your local track at home that's got, you know, track wearing away and kind of no kind of set up there. So the track and Brock are the two best places.
Yeah. Do you have any like pre-race superstitions or routines?
Not particularly. I'll always make sure the last kind of food thing I have, I always have a couple packets of raisins. That's like my go-to. It works. I don't know why it works. It about an hour, 45 minutes before, it's down a couple. You know, those small like containers buy, those multi packs. Yeah, yeah. Two of them normally, that kind of gets me going. Sends my juices going. Because I don't drink coffee. I'm not a caffeine guy.
What?
So yeah, I've never really been into coffee. I think Rory Leonard probably put me off it last year, him having 10 cups a day. But yeah, I've never really been into it, don't particularly like it, so I guess that's just the way it is.
Wow. So you can race off no caffeine?
Yeah, I have tried the caffeine kind of tablet shot in the past, and I tried it in a cross country once this year, and the stomach was in a bad place afterwards, so I kind of said no to that. But I'm kind of trying. I'm trying it a bit more again in like before training and stuff, and get used to it, because it's supposed to help.
It's a performance enhancer. I'm sure of it. But yeah, you must be.
It probably is for me because I'm not reliant on it.
Most it's just getting them through the day. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy to. I think every runner will kind of be like, goodness me, what can this man do on coffee?
You should do a Nick Simmons and make your own like caffeine raisins or something.
I'd be well up for that. If there's any raisin sponsors out there, hit me up.
Yeah, get them made. And then just before we end, like, talk us through your shoe rotation, because obviously a lot of the athletes we get on here are they're tied down to one brand and things like that. So what are you choosing to wear for your different days of the week and things like that?
Yeah, I'm one of the lucky ones. I can wear anything I want. So I've always been a Nike guy. I don't know why, just because everyone was when they were younger, weren't they? So it was always a Pegasus. I like the Invincibles for a long run or just an easy run. And then I was always a Saucony Endorphin Speed guy for just grass sessions or track sessions even. I don't particularly like Next Percents on the track because they're cheating. And then I race in Dragonflies, just because they're the only super spike I've been able to get my hands on. Obviously I know there's a few floating around now, and it would be nice to even try a few, but I'm happy with the Dragonfly, and that's kind of got me over track races the last year. So it's not a big shoe rotation. I'm trying to even think of other shoes I really own, but it is predominantly Nike, so probably like most people.
Well, talk about shoes. Get Jono over at Head Start Management to get you. You got to be knocking on the door of a bit of a deal soon.
We'll see how it goes. There's some times to be run first before any deals come knocking, at least.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Well, look, mate, it's been great to chat to you on the pod today. Thanks for coming on, and best of luck for the weekend and the rest of the season.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.